Hello everyone, and welcome to another Windows 7 video here on Channel 9. My name is Yoharki Yadi, and with me today, James Johnson. Please introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is James Johansson. I'm a developer on the Windows C++ team. I'm glad to be here today.
And today we're going to talk about something we call Project Hilo, right? James, what is Project Hilo?
Well, simply, Project Hilo is an ongoing effort to highlight Windows 7 technology and how the developer can integrate that technology into their native application. Project Hilo is less about an actual application, even though we've written one as a sample, and more about getting that user set up with what they need to do to integrate Windows 7 technologies such as touch, multi-touch, Windows Animation Manager, as well as the various others.
Cool. So basically, it's a great sample. We share the resource and everything. It provides guidance and best practices for how developers can pick up Windows 7 and start program native application for Windows 7 using all the goodies we have in Windows 7.
Correct. And we're also working on creating an ongoing conversation with developers. We're working on creating blogs, tweets, presentations such as this one we're doing right now, and various other communications with developers to try to keep them in touch with the current status of Project Hilo.
Right. And basically we're trying to say that, hey, Windows 7 is a great platform, and still probably the most common programming language used by Windows 7, definitely, and for Windows 7 for application is still native, right?
Correct.
And we want to show people how they can actually take advantage of whatever we have. So this will be just the first of many videos and the first of many engagements that we're going to have, and we're going to provide more guidance along the road. So James, when coming to Project Hilo, what were the first thing that you had to tackle? What were the design goals or the problems you were trying to solve?
So the first thing we had to look at is which technologies we wanted to use. C++ provides a bunch of different programming methodologies, and we took a look at each one and decided whether we wanted to keep that on the table. So we looked at MFC, ATL for COM, and various other C++ idioms. And then once we decided which ones we wanted to use, that allowed us to come up with a framework. And then that allowed us to decide which technologies we wanted to integrate. We knew we definitely wanted to do the Windows Animation Manager. We wanted to integrate that with Direct2D. And then using that, we could create an app experience that would show animation, but with the focus being on performance.
Cool. So basically, we'll get to all these fancy names and we'll figure out the specific details and technology to play with Project Hilo. But taking a step back, you mentioned that you've investigated several technologies. And eventually, you guys chose Win32 with some of layer of abstraction on top of that.
Yes.
So my question will be, if you chose Win32 over MFC, were there any particular reasons?
One of the main reasons is we consider MFC to be a little more complex than Win32. Yes, it's true that for a new developer, it takes about the same amount of ramp-up time for Win32 as MFC. But the reason we decided not to use MFC was because MFC works really well if you are inside the MFC box. If you want to introduce new functionality that doesn't fit inside that box, then MFC doesn't do a good job of integrating that with features outside the box.
Right. And Win32, which is basically Windows API, right?
Yes.
Allows you to do whatever you want, basically. And
correct.
The integration between whatever MFC doesn't have in the box to Win32 is a bit more complex. And this is why I actually chose Win32 to move forward.
Correct.
Cool. So you mentioned a couple of Windows technology, right? Like Windows Animation Manager, D2D.
Mm-hmm.
So what technology exactly went into Project Hilo?
So the three main ones that we focused on for Project Hilo was the Windows Animation Manager, because that's such a cool technology and it allows you to write minimal amount of code to get really cool effects. The next thing that we want to do is to support touch and multi-touch. And then the last thing is DirectX.
Right. And as you probably guys, folks, remember, we have covered all of this technology in previous Windows 7 videos on Channel 9. We'll have the links there attached to this post. And the important thing that we want to probably cover from this application, from this video, where the other were just, what's the API, how the thing work. This is actually a real implementation that uses them, right?
Correct.
Cool. So do you want to drill into any of those specifically, or we want to go into the application itself?
So I'd like to first start with the application itself, and
okay.
Then I was going to touch on each one of those and show some code.
Cool. So let's see the application.
Okay. So first thing you'll see when you start the browser is you're in the picture library. That's indicated here in the corner by pictures. And then we see our subfolders under pictures, which currently is family and Microsoft Surface. So let's go into the family, just a single click. And then we see some subfolders under there. Let's go one more level down to my son's first birthday party, which was just on May 1st.
Congrats.
Thank you. So we see here, you can do a pinch gesture. Can I start over? That allows you to change the size of your thumbnail. And then we expand the history. This shows us the history of where we've been since we started in pictures. So let's go up one level to family. And that shows us what's in that directory. Now let's go back up to the pictures directory. Now let's double click. That puts us in preview mode. And this here supports flicks. So we can do the forward and the backwards flick. And then again, we can pinch here. This will take it to out of preview mode. And there you have it.
Cool. So you zoom out. So you zoom out to where it's too small, then you go back to preview.
Exactly.
Really cool. So all these, I mean, we see all the smooth transaction animation. All these are basically responsible by the Windows Animation Manager in D2D, right?
Correct.
And all the windows that we are loading, all the images that we are loading is we're using Wik to load everything. We're using D2D to render everything, which is really, really cool.
Thank you.
So we've seen the Hilo browser as the application, and it looks great. I mean, you touch it, it's filled, it's animated, it's really, really cool. So behind the fancy graphics and functionality, can you take us through the architecture, please?
Yeah, no problem. So the browser is split into two main windows. On top, you saw the carousel pane. That showed you your current folder, as well as the subfolders in that current folder on the inner orbit.
Yep.
And then you saw the media pane, which is the part on the bottom that shows photos based on where you're currently at in the carousel pane. So, things I want to say about the architecture of the browser is design for performance. So we have DoTD, so we have Direct2D whenever we can. We use shell APIs, so if you notice when we loaded those thumbnails, we didn't rely on going to the files directly and loading the full image, we actually relied on shell,
right,
which caches thumbnails for you.
And the shell has a whole slew of APIs just to, you know, present the thumbnail and the preview handler and search and all bunch of other stuff.
Correct.
So you can actually leverage that instead of trying to get the metadata from the file itself.
Exactly. And then the last thing we try to do is we put in an asynchronous loader so that when you start an animation, it's not having to sit there and wait to load images. We have a default image that allows the animation just immediately kick off, and then as it's able to load images, including the shell thumbnail, then they just pop into view.
Cool.
And you notice this application experience was fast enough, we didn't notice that.
Right. So you're running a pretty strong machine, a powerful computer over here, so this is probably why you did it. But eventually you're saying that all this work was to create this immersive feeling that the user is like, everything is in motion all the time, everything is like fluid and smooth, rather than have to choppy and wait for files to load, or iSync or I/O or whatever like that. And even on a lower-end machine, you'll probably get a great experience with this app.
Exactly. In fact, we targeted netbook machines to make sure that our performance was on par.
Right. And I guess the performance were pretty good on those machines as well.
Yes, there are a few machines where they don't have support for DirectX, the current version. And so we've seen a few issues with that. But yeah, for the most part, it's a good experience, even on low-end machine.
So, coming to integrate all those Windows API and shell and D2D and all of this together, was there any particular difficult part? Or there anything beyond going into the architecture and investigating all the different APIs and understanding what you want to do? Is there anything like it's really difficult to implement within those APIs and for this app?
Well, the hardest part was with DirectX, you're not given any basic common controls. You kind of have to define where you want everything to be. So I'd say the most difficult part was we had a good look and feel produced by a design guy, but it was just getting that laid out in the right position, getting it to feel right, getting the animations to feel right. But actually, it was a lot simpler than I thought it would be, in part because of the technology in Windows 7 have exposed interfaces easy to work with.
So you talk about the architecture and the high-level overview of how the application is constructed. Do you want to take us through the code, see some example? Maybe we can dive into specific detail about like what is exactly the Hilo sample framework and what kind of abstraction you did and what else the developer needs to work with.
So the first thing I'd like to dive into is how we use interfaces. So we try to make use of interfaces wherever possible. So in order to support this, we created two main objects called shared object and comptr.
So what exactly are shared object and comptr for those folks there who are not completely familiar with the terminology? Okay.
So shared object encapsulates ion known. So it will automatically support calling add ref, release, and query interface.
Cool.
And then comptr is, you can think of it as a smart pointer. So when you define a new interface, then you declare an object of that interface, you just wrap it with the comptr, and that automatically gives you add, ref, and release.
Right.
You don't have to worry about reference counting.
So it simplified the way we work with the comp object, basically.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So let's see it in action.
Okay. So here's an example of us using the shared object class. So we have the async loader helper. And we're using the shared object here, and all we have to do is call create. And what this does is this will end up calling the initialize method in the async loader class, and it will give us back a pointer to an async loader helper.
In addition to the initialize method within every implementation of the class, what it is basically, it's like the constructor, right? This is where you will do whatever you normally do in the constructor for a class.
So normally the model we want to follow here is we want user creates an object that we want them to call initialize, and we're kind of forcing that on them by setting up this idiom of having to call the create method, which in turn calls initialize, which in turn calls the constructor.
Yeah. Okay, makes sense. So basically it's a factory for us to make the shared object that we want to work with.
Correct.
Cool. So you mentioned some cool shell implementation, right? We use all the shell goodies in Windows. Why don't you take us through that?
Okay. So we have here shell item loader.
Mm-hmm.
This is essentially a static library that right now has one message where we say enumerate folder items, and we give it a shell item. We tell it what file type we want to look for. Initially, right now, all we have is photos, images, although Hilo may in some time in the future support other
documentation,
other file types,
cool,
such as videos and maybe even sound. So shell item loader has one method called enumerate folder items. Let's take a look at the code inside that method. So here you can see that we're pushing to a vector of item kinds. So right now we only support pictures. You can see video and music. That's stuff we may support going forward. Then we set up our shell folder, which is essentially our search location. And then we call a bunch of shell methods here to set up that search and enumerate through all the shell items, see if it's the one we want, and then add it to a return vector of items.
Okay. And where is the cool async stuff that you mentioned about the preview and thumbnails?
That is in a class I did not work on at all, so. So the async loader stuff is in its own library. We have async loader manager. So the way that the async loader works is it has a layout manager in which it has a window. So on the media pane you saw that it can only fit so many images.
Right.
So the async loader had a concept of only 10 images could fit in the center window, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It would put highest priority on those images there, and then load them in the background as quick as possible. And then the second priority would be images that are out of view to the right. Because we expect the most common thing a user is going to do when they want to view more photos is go right.
Pretty
then
much.
The third priority is images on the left. Now another thing we have to take care of with asynchronous loader is when the user shrinks and expands the thumbnails using the pinch gesture.
Mm-hmm.
So what we try to do is we try to load up to a certain size, and then if the image is to the right of load, the image is to the left of load, the next thing you do is load the next sides up.
So basically you're keeping a whole set of thumbnail pre-cached basically
yes.
in memory to make it faster.
Exactly.
Okay. So beside the shell, you also had D2D and Animation Manager, right?
Yes. So next thing I'd like to talk about is the Windows Animation Manager. So Windows Animation Manager, if you've previously heard in Channel 9, it's very cool. And it consists of three main components. It consists of the manager itself, a set of animation variables that essentially keep track of where a visual element is on the screen or different aspects of that visual element, such as opacity, scale. And then the third thing is the timing system. This is what allows the animation to actually occur over time, and this is what calculates the position of animation variables for you. The developer no longer has to worry about setting up a timer, manually calculating where something is based on the amount of time that's passed. That's all handled by the timing system.
Right. And you already get basically the, just the rendering events for you to draw.
Yeah.
And you exactly. can use whatever technology you want to do it, basically, to draw. You don't confine into any specific technology.
Right. Cool. I know some other technologies have animation built into them, but like you said, that nails you into that very specific technology. So I'd like to show some code for the Windows Animation Manager that we've made use of. So the first thing is we have an animation utility, which takes the creation of the three main objects in the Windows Animation Manager and kind of abstracts that away. So all you have to do is say get create storyboard, and then you can start adding transitions.
Cool.
So let's take a look at that code.
Sure.
So here's the header file for the animation utility. It's essentially a bunch of static methods to get the animation manager, the animation timer, and a transition library, as well as to create a storyboard and to update the animation manager with the current time. Let's take a look at the actual code behind these methods. So the important one is the initialize method. This will get called anytime you get do a get that requires these underlying objects. It will automatically call the initialize method. So the three important parts of an animation manager, the animation is the manager. So we create a manager, we create a timer, and we create a transition library. That's it.
And these are all basically Windows Animation Manager APIs.
Yes.
Cool. So we created a set of COM objects, and now the utility is basically set up, and how do you use it?
So in order to use it, let's see an example of using the animation utility to set up and kick off an animation.
Sure, sounds good.
So we have the carousel animation class, which essentially in the upper part of the carousel pane, there's three different things we want to keep track of. One is the rotation location for where the icons are in the orbit. We just have one key location, and all the other ones are drawn off of that.
Right.
Then we have the icon scale, which as the orbit was going into the corner, you notice the icons were shrinking.
Mm-hmm.
So we're keeping track of that value. We go from one to a smaller scale. And then the next thing is opacity. So anytime we want icons to fade in and out, we have to animate that opacity. So this class here has getInfo, which will return each of those three values. It'll just use whatever the current animation time is and automatically get the correct value for you. We start with initialize, we set up our initial values, and then we have setup methods for each one of those. So let's take a look at the code to actually set up rotation.
Cool. And the, and this is basically for the entire carousel, right? I mean, within the code, it's probably going to see how you handle each individual element.
Yes.
But as far as the framework or sample framework that we've created here, basically this gives you a way to handle the entire carousel.
Yes.
Okay.
Using the least amount of code, making it simple.
Yep.
So, animation. Okay, here's the setup rotation method. So, you have two things here. We have a storyboard, which every animation you want to do has to be defined in the context of a storyboard.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing we have is a transition. For this case, we only have one transition because we're only going from one value to another value. So, So we get the animation manager. We initialize if we needed to. So if this is the first time you've set up a rotation, we'll automatically initialize all the animation variables in the manager itself.
Sure.
So here we create a storyboard. We create one transition, which is we call create accelerate decelerate transition, which allows you to go from point X to point Y, and allows you to accelerate over a portion of that. They have a acceleration deceleration ratio. In our case, we want it to spin off immediately full speed and then slow down. So we put our deceleration ratio at 1. And that'll give us the effect of it kicked off real quick and then there's some friction on it and it slowed it down. And we call add transition. We tell it what animation variable we want it to process. And then that's it. We schedule a storyboard and then we're ready to animate.
Cool. And we've seen the animation in the demo, which looks pretty good.
Thank you.
Excellent. So once we have the animation and everything works, the next bits basically is actually to render the stuff, right?
Yes.
And you use the Direct2D for that, D2D.
Correct.
So why don't you take us through that, please?
Okay. Let me...
And maybe we'll probably talk about, so why did you choose, you know, D2D and not D3D or... GDI Plus or whatever.
So the reason that we picked Direct2D is today's computers have a very powerful graphics card. In order to make full use of this graphics card, you have to have a library that knows how to make full use of the hardware that's available. Direct2D does that.
Right.
And it also allows you to have the library where if the graphics hardware doesn't support particular functionality, you'll use software. Processing.
It has separated. So we have covered Direct2D in our previous Windows 7 videos on Channel 9, and we have covered pretty much a lot of the infrastructure as well. Why don't we see some of the implementation or gotchas that you want to walk us through in Product Hilo?
So first thing I'd like to show you is the Direct2D utility. It's a static library that we've created to kind of assist you with common things you do with Direct2D. Such as loading a bitmap, getting a D2D factory, getting a direct write factory for text.
So you guys are using D2D, you guys are using direct write as well, and I guess you're using WIC also?
Correct. WIC bitmap for loading. That allows the user to not have to worry about what particular file type they're working with. WIC bitmap gives you the encoders that automatically know what a JPEG is and knows what a bitmap is.
Right.
And you just simply load it in, you get the metadata you need, and the WIC bitmap does the rest for you.
Cool. And it's probably very important to mention that all of that technology works with Windows 7, but for most of all the graphics stack, we also have downport for Windows Vista. Cool. So let's see the example.
Okay. So let's take a quick look at the header file. We'll see some common methods you probably would expect to find any application that deals with Direct2D. We load a bitmap from a file.
Sure.
We also load a bitmap from a resource. And then to support shell API, we have a method here called decode image from thumbnail cache, which will actually go to the shell item, go to the cache, and pull that image and put it into a Direct2D bitmap.
Cool.
And then a few factory methods to get the factory, get the D2D factory, the WIC factory, and the direct write factory.
So we did abstraction in hand, basically it pretty much simplified the way that you actually approach when writing the apps itself, right? I mean, you have those different utilities supporting you in actually writing, loading a file or just populating the content of the carousel and creating that, and all those utilities are a great help. And I presume that when we talk about the Hilo sample framework, all these utilities are what we are referring to, correct?
Right. What we're trying to show is one way for a native developer to quickly get up to speed and to create a nice framework for themselves. So you can actually get to the nitty-gritty, the real part of the application, the meat and potatoes of it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to spend all your time worrying about trivial tasks.
Right. And the code is available to download, so you can take a look at it later. So we've covered Project Hilo, the overview. We've took into took a dive into the architecture. We've seen a little bit of the code, which is great. Any last word for closure?
I'd just like to say stay tuned. We're going to do some more presentations. We're going to do more blogs. We want to get out there, and we want to have users provide feedback on Project Hilo.
Right. So please comment on this video, comment on the post. We're going to have all the links for the blogs, to where to download the code, and obviously stay tuned for more Hilo project videos here on Channel 9 and Windows 7 in general on Channel 9. Thank you very much.